So I'm Rick Hansen, and this is May 8th, 2013. And I want to talk with you tonight in a way as a kind of guided reflection into something that's been really impactful for me recently, which is the two-word practice of accept dependence. And so this week and next, I want to explore this with you, including its practical implications. So what do I mean by accept dependence, right? And I don't mean accept dependence. I mean accept dependence. Accept it. Give up to it. Surrender to the fact of dependence. It's interesting how much the Buddha's teaching is really about the recognition that things arise due to causes and then they pass away due to causes, moment by moment by moment, so that everything has what he called dependent origination. It originates dependently, it ends dependently, and that's our nature. That's the nature of the material world, and that's very clearly the nature of our own experience, this dependent origination. So for example, one very practically useful example of that in this kind of intertwining 12-element model he has are four in particular, where you have a sequence that flows from contact, or in our modern psychological age we would call stimulus, contact to the feeling tone or the hedonic tone of the experience as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and then craving and clinging, and then suffering. So that's an example of how things arise dependently and pass away dependently. All right. He said that one who recognizes the arising and passing away of mental and physical phenomena is someone who has really gotten the hold of his teaching, which is a liberating teaching. So he's really saying that tuning into and recognizing, accepting, being open to the reality of the arising and passing away of things, and the fact that things arise and pass away, including us, including our bodies, our thoughts, our feelings, our desires, our moment-to-moment experience of living. This moment right now, in your experience right now, is being constructed. It's being constructed due to causes, and then it passes away due to causes. In a fundamental sense, he was saying that resisting this truth is the basis of suffering. Because in a funny way, craving is based on some sense of deficit or disturbance in the way things really are, right? Whereas if we accept our dependence on things and the way that they are, there's no basis for resisting them or chasing after experiences or clinging in terms of our relationships. Now, dependence is not something that Westerners tend to accept, right? I had a friend of mine probably 30 years ago. John was in the middle of a love relationship, and the woman he was with was just not that into him. You know that place, right? She just wasn't that into him. And he didn't like that at all. Good. Things are still recording. I'm glad about that. Are you listening, John? But anyway, no. 30 years ago. And so I said to him, with my well-intended human potential, infinite wisdom, well, John, what about surrender? And he replied immediately, I don't do surrender. Right? He was, that kind of guy. And, well, that's okay. We ended up getting drunk that night, and he ended up throwing up on my shoe. I had to surrender to it, but things got better after a while. But anyway, so he doesn't do surrender. We have a culture. We don't do surrender, do we? We don't accept dependence. The idea of being dependent on others, it really violates, in many ways, frankly, the American psyche. There's an interesting book. It's called The European Dream. It's about the culture of Europe, the European Union, contrasted to the culture of America. Obviously, take books like this with a grain of salt. I think Jeremy Rifkin wrote it. It's really a brilliant piece of work. And he points out that in Europe, the culture, with many exceptions, of course, says that safety is found in community. Whereas America, again, as a generalization, many exceptions, safety, security is found in individualism, in golden guns, essentially. And so you can see the effort in our culture, American culture, to not be dependent, to not live dependently. So I want to take you through four reflections that are experiential about dependence and talk a bit about each one as I go through them, all right? And I suspect there will be some aftermath that we'll be following up on next week, all right? And the whole point of the consideration is to go to, as the Buddha said, the highest happiness, which is peace, okay? So you want to try this with me? This is very alive for me, you know, so I'm okay, feeling my way here a little bit. So the first consideration of these is to explore the reality of our dependence. And so I'm going to invite you into several little considerations. They could get a little upsetting. It's not to make you upset, but rather to recognize, whoa, we really are dependent. Okay? So be careful. Thanks for closing that door. Be careful. Take care of yourself. And here we go. Okay, the first one is, and I'll count out the time here, and if you can't do it, it's okay, but it could be instructive. The very first one is when I say so. Ready? Stop breathing for 30 seconds. That's a really long time. Who in this room could doubt our dependence on air? I nearly drowned when I was 16, trapped in kelp, Southern California, underwater for probably time. I mean, I panicked, time. I lost sense of time, but I was under a really long time, probably well over a minute. That was just half a minute. You know, we're deeply dependent on air, obviously oxygen in particular. We're dependent by extension, of course, on the plants that produce the air. Our inhalation is their exhalation, and vice versa. No plants, no oxygen, no us, right? It's very intimate to really feel our deep vulnerability. I mean, lose access to air for 30 seconds, it gets upsetting. 1 minute, we're in serious trouble. You know, 4 minutes, brain death. 4 minutes, basically. Pretty real. Here's a different variation on this. Imagine if you can, kind of vividly, that for some reason you can no longer lock your doors or windows for a year. Kind of imagine that. You know, you probably live in a fairly safe place, maybe not, but imagine you can't rely upon those physical protections for a year. Like how well would you sleep? You've got children maybe, you've got possessions. Here's another one. Imagine something that you like eating, okay? It's discretionary. Chocolate, 70%, right? Or whatever it is, think about it, okay? Alcohol, think about caffeine, right? And then again, just imagine, okay, what if for some reason you renounced it for a year, or your doctor told you, you can't have that anymore for 1 year, okay? Whoa, here's another one. This one kind of pushes it, so take care of yourself, and you might just want to touch on this one very lightly and then move on. Imagine a handful of people that are important to you in your life these days. And then imagine, for some reason, tragically, they're gone, suddenly gone. So, coming back, what happens for you when you go through those little things that I thank you for letting me take you through right here, in terms of experiencing the first of the four reflections tonight? So, how was that for you? What did you see?
Suffering.
It was suffering? Can you say a little more?
Anxiety.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Pain.
Okay. Thank you, yeah. Yeah, me too. I wouldn't want it to happen. Yeah, Julie.
I found on the third one where we gave up a discretionary but well-liked food for a year, I would have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's in my control,
yeah.
That discretion. But the other three were tough.
Yeah.
And losing the important people, that I felt him stabbed in my heart.
Yeah.
Thinking about that could be real.
Yeah.
For some people, it is.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That one I couldn't live without.
Yeah.
The other ones, I didn't feel threatened by them, but the last one, like you said, it was just, and Julie too, like it was a gut feeling of loss and suffering. Right?
Yeah.
And woe, I would think someone could say that and it would make you feel so deeply.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't want to traumatize anybody, especially with the last one. That's why I kind of said, just touch it and move on, you know. Okay, maybe one more person, just.
Anything.
Yeah, please.
Anything that you enjoy taking that away. For example, for me, somebody said you can meditate for a whole year, or you cannot do yoga. I mean, I love to do any kind of exercise. Cannot do yoga for a year, then it will just rub my, you know, jaw. As far as a habitual thing goes, bad, you know, not the positive,
yeah,
but negative, you know, like a tea or a coffee, you can just give up for a year.
Yeah.
As you know, renunciations.
Some are easier than others,
right.
You know. Yeah, that's for sure. What happens for me when I do this myself is that, and you might notice some of this in your own psychology, that a kind of presumption of, you know, independence or it's like a grandiosity almost, or I'm in control, it suddenly becomes evident how much, moment to moment, it feels like my own personal imagery is a kind of extending into a net, as if I realize I'm just this little node on a net with 1,000 threads tugging and pulling and stretching in different directions. And moment to moment, you know, what's happening here is dependent on how that net is being tugged, right? Moment by moment by moment. And what initially comes up is a kind of fear about being that vulnerable. You know, there's a kind of softness and in the recognition of our frailty. So that's the first reflection. Yeah.
It occurs to me that the times I'm happiest about something, or most grateful about something, is right after I think they've been taken away. When you said about the drowning and kelp, I remember the story of a person under the wave and was drowning, and then came up, and that first breath of air was like, oh, I can breathe again.
Yeah. Yeah.
The pleasure of, oh, I can take yet one more breath.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, good. Let's try it a little differently. Now, here's the second reflection. This time, in a sense, instead of focusing on how, you know, you are dependent on things, flip it around and just take a moment to reflect on how you contribute to other people, how they are, in some senses, dependent upon you. You know, the protections you offer them, you might think of people in your life, perhaps the money you make or the encouragement you give, the dishes you do, the babies you watch, you know, the job, the moving forward of life. So I'll be quiet for a minute or so, and just see if you can imagine almost like ripples moving out from you, as if we're kind of bobbing together in this net or this surface of a sea, and ripples emanating from you that are lifting and affecting others. Okay, so seeing how that was, that second reflection, any comments on that?
Yeah, this morning I had an exact real example of that. So I met with a client of mine just yesterday. We found out that I had resolved an extremely difficult tax problem that was disrupting her whole life, her boyfriend, her own life, her children's lives, her friends' lives, because there were so many negative options that could have happened. And then we got a letter that it was gone. And she came in this morning, she was like elated. And I could feel as we talked the relief that went through her whole network. That kind of started. Well, it started with her paying her taxes, but it also started with me guiding the resolution, and then it came to be. And when they left, or when she left, I just felt so good that I could see the reality of where I fit in that process with her. It was really, really nice.
Great, thank
and
you.
She paid me too.
Yeah, please.
It felt like a shift for me from the first one to feeling the victim in the world to feeling empowered.
Right.
What you can do versus what's.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. And it's funny, because we're kind of obviously self-centered, you know, because we're in this body. We're very aware of how we arise dependently on other things, and sometimes we can feel like a victim, perhaps, or sometimes we can just go, wow, that's sort of just how it is, you know, for everybody. And it is funny, by the way, I don't know how it happened, but the word victim took on this kind of accusatory tone rather than a compassionate one, you know? And man, you're walking through life, at the light's green, you're in the crosswalk, and someone takes you out. You're victimized by it, and that's the truth of it. And I mean, that's a term of dignity. I think of all the victims of apartheid, you know, in South Africa, who could carry that with dignity. So anyway, that said, one thing that you might just play with is something that I've been playing with myself recently, is taking, it's almost like an extra heartbeat or half a breath to register that you like someone. Even almost a stranger, you can just look at their face or feel them or just interact briefly, and you know, you can suddenly find something to like in them. And you can feel that, and in the feeling of it, let it be evident in you as you are with them for that extra beat. And you just watch what happens. You know, people are really affected by that. It's quite subtle, isn't it? It's a mental event in you. Maybe your face changes a little bit. You maintain the gaze of extra 2 seconds longer than would be sort of normal, but you're locating an authentic liking. You might wish that they do the dishes differently still or something, or move out of your way on the freeway, but you could find what you could like about that person and then somehow let it be evident. So ripples of effect moving out from us in the great net, touching other people. And then through inference, we can see, okay, you're arising dependent upon me. That helps me appreciate the truth about the ways in which I arise dependent on others. Okay, here's a third reflection, all right? So this goes to the one of the five great reflections into bed. One of the five is, it's a question. Is it given to me to escape the results of my actions? And often the answer is kind of a bummer answer, like, dang, you know? But I want to take you into a little bit of a different reflection. Just being aware right now, again, for a few moments, of some of the good things in your life these days. Literally, the clothes that you're wearing right now, or the fact that you're here practicing, or have a practice altogether. In other words, how is this moment or this time in your life arising dependent on the causes rippling forward from prior versions of you? Earlier yous, the you this morning that chose a certain blouse or shirt to put on, or the one, the you a month ago who earned the money to buy that blouse, right? Or the you 20 years ago who completed some kind of training or schooling to be able to embark on a career. All the including the little things, the little clothes folded that are cleared so a space is cleared, the little touches of beauty in your home, the little moments of practice in your mind that you've earned, right? The fruits of which you've earned right now. So I'll be quiet again. So you just kind of reflect on how your own personal little buoy of this moment of being is bobbing up and down in a good place, in some good places, due to the help, in effect, that prior yous have given you this moment. If you'd like, for the next half minute or so, you can join me in, inside your own head, silently, thanking previous versions of you for various things. Okay. So just before we talk about it, just offering kind of an image. Again, when you look back to the previous yous that have sort of handed the baton forward over time, you could bring into awareness things that those previous yous did or virtuously didn't do. You know, the ways they weren't a jerk. Or they stopped doing something before it got weird. Or were smart and, you know, went home early from that party that was going out of control, you know what I mean? Or got out of the car that was driven by that maniac, or, okay? And so you can almost imagine like a parade of prior yous doing good things, you know, that are helping you right now. And then flip it around again in the imagery just for a moment and imagine the waves emanating out from you now to the yous in your future, the ways that those future yous will arise dependently upon what you do these days yourself. Okay, so let's talk about that. How was that for you? What happens when you do that? Brilliant. Oh, that's a nice word. Thank you. I'm glad. I think it's a, I'm glad you said it. I mean, thanks for the compliment, but more to the point, for me at least, is the value of the practice. You know? I'll be honest. Well, I'm always honest, but I don't say everything. So what I mean, I'll be more disclosed. I mean, it's kind of intimate to talk about this because it's intimate to really go into dependency. And our deep vulnerability around that. And it, you become increasingly undefended, right? And so, to what do you bow? Classically, we bow, right? We pay our respects. You bowing can be a little, can be also devotional, can have a quality of reverence in it, or not. It can have any one of those things. Minimally, there's a recognition and respect and a gratitude, right? So, what do you bow to routinely? And for me, you know, there are three things I personally routinely bow to. And you might ask what they are for you, you know. For me, one is the divine, you know, as I experience and conceive of that. Second is the Buddha, as a profound teacher. And the third is the previous stream of efforts, including my own, previous me's, as well as others, kind of in my lifetime, that have led to the results I have today. I really appreciate that. So you might ask yourself, you know, what you might bow to. Okay. And then I want to make sure we have time for the fourth reflection, but is there anybody else about, yeah, please. Oh, okay, great.
Any?
Can you hear what he said? Whatever you put into the system gives it back to you.
And it's a way that you're taught to make yourself a better being.
Yeah, that's great.
If you put kindness into the system, then you get kindness from the
system. Yeah, if you put kindness into the system, then you get kindness back from the system.
From the yeah. people around you.
Yeah, or the other thing. You know, if you put in, in other words, you put ill will into the system, comes back too.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I like the idea of thinking forward because I don't really think forward that often. And to think of the possibilities, when I think for myself and people think back how much they've grown and that the growth will may well be beyond anything that they imagine going
yeah.
forward, which is really pleasing.
Yeah, that's great. That's really true. Yeah. Yeah, Greg.
I like it too because for all the reasons given, it doesn't just separate time into past, present, and future. It's a flow.
Oh.
And that you're
yeah.
in that flow. So
yeah.
You don't take any part too seriously.
Yeah.
Well, just appreciation. And
that's great. That's great. Good. Thank you. That's, yeah. Rings right. Maybe one more person, then I'll do the fourth reflection.
I felt like thinking prior me's was very effective in instructing me in this moment and sort of reinforcing things. I found that I was thanking myself for prior generosity because you would were talking about clothes and I took it very literally and I was just sort of looking at my clothes. And I actually bought myself this coat with the encouragement of a girlfriend. and I generally have a history of scarcity issues and not
yeah.
buying clothes and being very, you know. And it's something that I've worked with, but I've never thought of it as in terms of being generous to myself. So
yeah.
thanking myself for this coat. Oh, man. That was really cool. So thank you. And that reminded me to be more generous with myself. The future selves will thank me.
Yeah, that's really great. Right?
Oh, very good.
That's great. That's great. Okay, so if a fourth reflection. This can feel more abstract, or it can also feel very wow into your own experience. It goes like this. So you may know the well-known three statements from Dogen, the great Zen master, lived in the, I think, the 1200s in Japan, and he said, to practice the way, the Buddhist way, in a deep way, is to study the self. And by that, he probably means, I think, the combination of both that sense of being an I inside, as well as the general way we tend to presume. We tend to presume that there's this kind of entity over here that's separated from everything else, and not really, in a deep sense, dependent on everything else, okay? It has its own motor. The first statement from Dogen is, to study the way is to study the self. Two ways to think about self, you know. One is the sense that there's an I inside, and you can recognize that in your own psychology commonly. There's this presumed perspective of I, right? I want, I think, I need, etc. Right? And then a broader way to think of self, and people use the word both ways often, and it gets kind of blurred, but the other way is this just fundamental notion that there's an entity here, you know, a thing, that is sort of separated out from everything else. And a little bit as if we are like our own little motorboat, and we're not really dependent on the wind and the tide. Okay? Okay. The second statement was, to study the self is to forget the self. Okay? In other words, to release both that presumed I, you know, the I perspective from inside, and to let go of or forget the presumption of being this sort of larger entity that's separated from all things. Okay? And then here's the kicker. To forget the self is to be illuminated by all things, or enlivened, depends on how the little mark, the symbol is translated, to be lived by all things. In other words, we're emptying out into allness. Emptying out into allness. Okay? So you can see, intellectually at least, that if you really relax into an utter, undefended dependence upon all things, you realize that you're really all things. You know, the particular wave in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, 2,000 miles from any land, has a particular form, but it's really the whole ocean moving, right? And in your own psychology, this is where also meditation can help, because you can really feel it in your psychology. So now I'm talking about it from the inside out, right? Not from an understanding it place, which is useful, but from a, wow, that's how it actually is place. From the inside out, if you completely become your own experience without any separating from it, or effort to control it, and you just kind of open out into it, you often can have this sense, maybe just for a, you know, snap of a finger, sometimes longer, or a lot of snaps, you know, one after the other, of, I don't know how to talk about it, but you're just, you're out there everythinging. And you're not psychotic, right? You're here, you know, they're there, they're having their own everythinging, and it's a little different because that little wave is a little different from this little wave, you know, even though they're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, right? And it's really the whole ocean wiggling. But you just kind of go, wow, you know, this here now obviously is arising dependently. on all the stimuli impinging and all the prior causes embedded in the nervous system, intertwining with this vast web that goes out into culture and nature and materiality and the Big Bang and, you know, out, right? And then you realize, wow, I'm like the whole ocean. There you are, you're like this little wave, and like it's the whole ocean. And it's cool, you gotta take care of this little wave, you know? Like it's different from that, like, right? You wanna, but it's, whoosh, you're lived by all things. That's pretty out there, isn't it? But it comes from this opening into, emptying out into undefended dependence. So I have no idea if this will work. For a couple minutes, I just invite you, and I'll do it with you, and then we'll talk about it just for a couple minutes, then we'll wrap, okay? See if you can, without efforting, because as soon as you try to make it happen, then you're like the guy or the guyette, whatever, the person, the being, you know, the motorboat, my engine, and I've got my hand on the tiller. So if you try to do this, you try to make it happen, you're just recreating the motorboat, you know what I mean? Okay. But see if you can just, like, really, so want to try it? Ready? You just like this, just... You're just opening into experience. It's like you're becoming increasingly just dependent. You're not trying to fabricate anything in your mind. You're letting experience literally just bubble, like that effervescent surface of a glass of soda water. It's just bubbling due to many causes, too many to even consider. Just whoosh. And you know somehow that this moment of experience is being caused by all the stuff that extends out from you, you know, the sounds around us, the physical properties of this environment, just California, Earth, etc. Ultimately, the whole universe, gravity. Reality living through you this moment. Okay, coming back. So, you know, if you're like me, and I think a lot of people, you might have had flashes of that. And a flash is enough. You just, then after, you start having more and more flashes, right? And actually, as I think about it, it might be interesting to do a whole meditation, just is what we're up to. Emptying out into allness, you know. Any reflections or anything that happened for you there? Recognizing the ridiculousness of me just saying on demand, let's go into allness, but that said, why not? All right. Yeah.
I remember you leading us through a guided meditation once in which you said, imagine that you're walking on a beach or something like this, but that you're only an outline, that you said, picture yourself as hollow. So when I picture myself as a
cartoon, just a
shape, and the landscape goes right through me, just as if you'd taken a picture and drawn just a shape. That works.
That's a beautiful method, yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great.
I'm still intellectualizing it, but at least.
But it, no, it's a door. It's, no, it takes you there. Yeah, that's great. Okay, maybe another personal too. We'll move to a wrap. Yeah.
The image that came to me was of those artists who did their paintings by lots of little dots.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Can't tell the boundary. And from a distance, it looks like you see boundaries. But when you get up close, the dots.
That's great. Yeah, Emily.
Actually, I had a question, and I don't know if it's quite the time for a kind of a semantic goal.
Probably not. But right afterward, okay? Is that okay? Thanks for the respect to that.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like, so my invitation to you, I want to get this in, and then we'll, one more person, is to play with these reflections and see what they do for you, you know? I know for myself, when I really bring this into mind, I treat the people I live with a lot more tenderly. Because I realize how dependent I am on them and how much they're affected by me. They're dependent on me, you know? Also, a second thing that can happen often is you can kind of like drop a load from your shoulders, partly because you realize that, I don't know how to put it, but a lot of earlier versions of you were really good guys, gender neutral, you know? Okay. And so the other thing is to play around with what is it like to actually take Dogen's advice, in a sense, and explore while driving or just hanging out or drinking water, what is it like to be enlivened by, lived by all things? We are lived by all things, in a way. We're waved in the ocean by the whole sea, the whole thing. Right? What's it like to actually be like kelp? You know? Anyway, undulating. What's really the difference between the kelp in the ocean and the guy trapped in it, actually? It's just one kind of whole thing. See what that's like, down to earth especially, you know? It's pretty wild to play around with. And what does that do to you? I think what that does is it ends suffering, because suffering is based on resisting this truth of our utter, complete dependence on the whole shebang. Did you have a thought?
When you said your thing about how you are more tender to others, I have to tell you, you took my experience and put words to it. When I let
yeah.
And realize my dependence upon others. I thought of my family. First, I just realized what a waste defending myself and protecting myself from hurt.
Yeah.
Because it just interfered with my accepting the love of people and giving love. So why not just give love? So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. How about we just sit for a minute and then we'll wrap up? Thank you all. See you next week, I hope. I'm going to talk next time about how to apply this to messy relationship problems. Why not?